real skin results start with one daily ritual. Meet Daily Microfoliant from Dermalogica. This iconic exfoliating powder activates with water to gently polish away dullness and uneven texture. It leaves skin instantly smoother and more luminous while supporting your skin barrier. Formulated with professional expertise to deliver visible results daily, even on sensitive skin. Discover your healthiest skin today. Visit Dermalogica.com and use code SMOOTH at checkout for an exclusive gift with your $65 purchase.
Lace him up for some Beast Talk. It's Odyssey's The Skate Pod on WEEI. Woo!
Welcome into episode 580 of The Skate Podcast. I am Brian DeFelice, joined by Bridget Prue and Scott McLaughlin. Scott, I like the Team USA apparel. I imagine that is for the World Cup starting.
That's right. Yeah, World Cup starting Thursday. USA's first game is Friday night, but I'm pumped. I'm going to watch it as much World Cup as I can. I think I'm going to go to one of the games at Gillette. I unfortunately did not get approved for a credential, but I think I'm going to splurge on tickets. Feel like it's the kind of thing where it's like, I don't know if I'll ever have a chance to go again. So I'd probably be kicking myself if I don't get down there for a game. So, yeah, I'm pumped. I think people know I'm a huge soccer fan. So this will. It's good timing because unfortunately the Red Sox are unwatchable. So now I'll actually, but besides two great finals for NHL and NBA, I'll also now have World Cup to watch.
What happened to Italy, Scott? Because I was reading that they apparently haven't qualified for the last three World Cups, and it's like, what, a field of 40?
Yeah, 48 teams this year, expanded field, and they still didn't qualify. They got knocked out by Bosnia and Herzegovina in a knockout game. They weren't good enough in group play through European qualifying. It's crazy, man. Like, obviously, like one of the most historic soccer countries in the world, and they've just fallen off so far. Like, I don't know what it is. They don't play well. They haven't had talented enough players. Amazingly, they won Euros in the middle of all this. I think that was 2020, maybe. They won Euros. Like, they're the best team in Europe, and then they still didn't qualify for the next World Cup. So, tough times for Italian soccer.
Yeah, it's just interesting because, like, there's so many, like, small island nations and, like, Middle Eastern countries you just wouldn't think would qualify over Italy. It's like Italy's such a storied, you know, country.
I mean, so FIFA makes sure they, like, spread it out by continent. So, like, it's easier to qualify out of Asia or Africa or South America.
Got it.
Europe does get limited. So like if you were to make a list of like the best teams that aren't at the World Cup, they'd probably all be European countries because they do cap just how many of them can make it from one continent.
Got it. Okay. Got it. Interesting. So it's kind of like, if to bring it back to the NHL, it's kind of like if you have an Eastern Conference team that finishes with, you know, 96 points, but it's not good enough to be top three or wild card, but it would have been good enough to be a division winner in the West. It's kind of like that.
Yeah, right? like this season where the Pacific Division sucked, but they still have to have three teams in the playoffs.
Including a cup finalist right now. Yeah. So crazy. Bridget, how are you doing? I feel like you weren't expecting the soccer convo right off the top here.
You guys always like surprise me off the top. I'm just sitting here like, all right, we're going to talk about hockey. Nope, ghost stories, World Cup. So,
well, yeah. Scott's shirt kind of got me thinking about soccer, and obviously, where is USA playing their game or their first games?
So they're out west for the group stage. So their first game's in LA, then they're in Seattle, and then back to LA for their third game.
Okay. Bridget, was the beautiful city of Attleboro known for their soccer growing up? Their soccer programs, yeah, big soccer.
Well, yeah, I mean, I played, but no, we had a guy come out of Attleboro. He was a few years older than me, Jeff Cameron, who played for Team USA back a few World Cups ago. Played, I think, multiple times. Was on the U.S. Soccer team for World Cup and played in the Premier League too. But the funny thing is he could walk through the school and nobody had any idea who he was, but he was like super famous in England and in other places, but people in his own hometown, like few of us were like, oh, that's Jeff Cameron. But like most people had no idea who he was. So it's just kind of shows you how soccer stars here just don't even get recognized really, even by the people that are from their same town. I don't know.
Well, you know what's been funny? I don't know if you, so Scotland fans have like started to invade the region because Scotland plays in the first game in Foxborough on Saturday night. And so they, I think they made Hennessy's in Boston kind of like their unofficial home bar. And the BBC did like a report talking to Scotland fans there. And they're like, yeah, it's been great. The pubs are awesome, but no one seems to know that the World Cup's happening. Because like we walked in our Scotland jerseys and like the bartender was like, oh, what are you guys here for? And they were like, the World Cup.
That's funny. Yeah, it's crazy when you think about how, you know, soccer is far and away the most popular sport in the world. But here in the US, it's, you know, it's a distant, call it what you will, fifth, sixth. I mean, you got the NFL, the NBA, MLB, NHL, college football, like all those things are, you know. But anyway, what's that pub off of Route 1 heading to Gillette? Is it Murphy's?
I think that's right.
It's like an Irish pub, right? Yeah. Obviously, that's not Scottish, but, you know, similar region, I suppose. Maybe the closest that they can get around here. I don't know if there are Scottish pubs, per se, in the U.S.
True. Yeah, the Irish and Scottish tend to be friends. They both like to dunk on the English together, so.
Okay. Well, that'll wrap it up for the first episode of the Red Card Podcast. Now on to 580 of the Skate Podcast. Scott, why don't you start off with your opening shift here?
It seems like the Bruins have their new assistant coach. Obviously had an opening with Jay Leach leaving. They did not renew his contract. Jay Leach has since been hired by the Hartford Wolfpack to be their head coach, the AHL team of the New York Rangers. He was also in the running for the Harvard head coaching job, but decides to go back to the AHL. So the Bruins have not confirmed this yet, but Elliot Friedman was the first to report this week that they're hiring Matt McIlvain, who most recently was head coach of the San Diego Gulls, who are the Anaheim Ducks AHL team. There is a connection here with Marco Sturm, so this makes a lot of sense. McIlvain was an assistant coach on Sturm's staff for Team Germany at the 2018 Olympics. That team won silver, in an Olympics without NHL players. But it was interesting actually reading about kind of the backstory there, where McIlvain was kind of like a last-minute hire. Someone who was on Sturm's staff left like right just a couple weeks before the Olympics, and Sturm didn't even know McIlvain yet at the time, but I think he was like recommended to him and he added him. And I believe McIlvain's duties were especially focused on the penalty kill, but defense as well. From what I've read and heard, he is kind of a defensive oriented coach. So you would think maybe that is what his focus would be with the Bruins, but we'll see. I think he also has run a power play in a couple different spots. So, no word yet on what his exact role will be, but obviously if he's a one for one replacement for Jay Leach, then it would be the defense that he'll focus on. But yeah, the Sturm, when McIlvain got hired by San Diego, Sturm at the time was with the Ontario Reign, you know, who kind of have like an AHL rivalry with San Diego because they're near each other. Their NHL clubs are rivals. But Sturm had like a glowing comments about McIlvain and said, basically, like, you know, if I ever get a head coaching job, like, I'd love to have him on my staff. So now it appears that is indeed happening. So that'll be interesting to see. But it sounds like someone who should be maybe, you know, we talked about this at the time when they moved on from Leach, that it opens the door for Sturm to kind of add his own guy, you know, similar to going out and getting Steve Spott last year. Give Sturm some say over kind of building out his staff after inheriting most of his staff other than Spott last year. So now he's going to get one of his guys who you would think should have a pretty good grasp of what Sturm wants to do, what his systems are, all of that.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And so it'll be interesting. The team hasn't put out a statement or anything. Like, we always get the PR emails right away when they're announcing a hire, so that part of the process, I mean, I believe what Elliot Friedman reports for the most part. So like it sounds like that's what's going to happen, but there's not been an official press release or anything yet. So we'll talk about it more when that does happen. Still some Bruins offseason news coming in. Not just, you know, we're not just going to talk about the Stanley Cup Finals, because a little bit more here with Cam Neely hosting a golf tournament, a charity golf tournament this past weekend. Or when was that? Was
it? I think it was Monday or Tuesday.
So early this week. And a few of the reporters were there, including Steve Conroy from the Boston Herald. And I wanted to read a quote from Cam Neely talking about kind of the upcoming offseason and what they're looking for and what conversations are like. So I'll skip down to where he says, obviously at the start of the year, there's a lot more names on the potential UFA list that kind of dried up. In talking with Don Sweeney, when he came out of the combine, there's a lot of chatter about trades. So we'll see where it goes. And he also said, obviously throughout the year, we were a little bit light in the top six, and that's still an area we want to address. On the back end, the elusive right shot D that has some offense on the offensive blue line would be helpful. So really acknowledging what we've kind of talked about. And it was really, it's the same issue they had last offseason, right? Like who's going to score in the top six outside of Pastrnak, and where are they going to get, you know, a right shot defenseman? And I just don't think, I mean, they got Arvidsson, right? That helped with the top six, though we weren't sure going into this season how much it was going to help. We didn't know if that second line was going to be able to score at all. Obviously they were, and they had a good year, but they're almost back to square one in that, still looking to add to the top six and a right shot. Now I'm sure that's the story with most teams. It's like, well, we can always add more in the top six, but it's really difficult to do. So, but I think, guys, the interesting part of that too, which should help us lead back into the Larkin conversation, is that at the combine, when the general managers were there, they're bouncing ideas off of each other. They're bouncing, I'm sure it's like kind of in a casual setting, but, you know, Sweeney's talking to other GMs, and trades are, if there's chatter about a lot of different trade options, that's good news for the Bruins, because it seems like with not a lot of UFAs out there that maybe they're interested in, based on this comment, they could be going the trade route.
Yeah, I feel like it's going to be a very active summer. And I think the next 3 weeks, 3-4 weeks is going to be very, very telling. I think free agency is on July 1st, but I think the fireworks might start a little bit before that. I think, you know, some trades around the draft, in particular involving the Bruins potentially. Like, I look at Mason Lowry, and I would be surprised if he were a Bruin next year. I just feel like the writing's kind of on the wall, but I could be wrong about that. You know, and some other players, like, you know, are they going to try to move on from Mittelstadt? Are they going to try to move on from, you know, Patra and some type of, like, I don't know. We'll see. But there's definitely some work to be done on the roster. We all know that. And Bridget, you mentioned Dylan Larkin, and that's going to lead to my opening shift. And Elliot Friedman, on a recent episode of the 32 Thoughts podcast, mentioned how he feels like the league is changing, and that it really started changing with the Matthew Tkachuk situation kind of, you know, influencing his destination out of Calgary. And then with the Quinn Hughes situation, you know, requesting out of Vancouver and being in Minnesota, nice and happy as a Clam now. And then, you know, before the draft lottery, there was some speculation out of Toronto that Austin Matthews, like, wants some significant changes to the roster and improvements, and wanted to know in detail what their plan was, and if they didn't like what they had to say, that he might, you know, return to Toronto. And then, of course, they win the draft lottery, and I don't think that solves all of his questions, but it probably helps a little bit right now. Dylan Larkin requests a trade. You know, there's a commonality with these players. They're all buddies. They're all from, you know, the U.S. national program. They've all won gold medals together. And not every situation is the same with each one of these guys. And Scott, I'll allow you, as we go into this conversation, to outline that. But it just got me thinking. Oh, the other thing Elliot said was he doesn't think it's the last trade request this summer. So I don't think that the Bruins top players are in that category right now. I don't think that as we speak, in June of 2026 that David Pastrnak wants to trade or Charlie McAvoy wants to trade right now. I'm not saying that. I don't believe that. But the conversation gets me wondering if the Bruins management aren't able to, you know, improve this roster or trend, continue to trend upwards in a meaningful way, you know, could they be vulnerable or subject to one of their top players asking out? Not right now, but maybe in a year, maybe two, maybe three, because it's where the league seems to be going. And I throw that to you guys, and it's just something that's crossed my mind.
Yeah, I think it's you're right on both counts. Like, it's not, based on everything I've heard, it's not an issue at the moment. I don't think we're going to hear, you know, about David Pastrnak or Charlie McAvoy wanting out right now. It is definitely a fair concern moving forward. Like, if these next, I don't know, call it 2 to 3 years don't go well, say the team takes a step back and misses the playoffs next year, which, you know, we've talked about. Like, we certainly think it's possible, depending on how this offseason goes, given how strong the rest of the division looks, given, you know, how much they relied on not luck, but really relied on goaltending and like a high team shooting percentage last year, you know, stuff that's not always sustainable year to year. Like, it could happen. And if it does, and, you know, at some point you could get to a place where Pastrnak and McAvoy look around and go, I'm 32 now, 30 years old, whatever. And it doesn't feel like we're all that close to winning. I want to go somewhere that's closer to winning. Like, it absolutely is something that I think you have to at least have in mind. Again, it doesn't mean that you go all in right now and trade away your entire future. Like, no, that's not especially smart, but it does mean you got to be cognizant of, you know, if you take a more patient approach and say, okay, let's build this slowly, well, you better have buy-in from your top players and patience there that those guys might or might not have. So, yeah, it's why I'm probably, you know, a little bit more open than a lot of people to taking a swing now if it presents itself and makes sense. And that's, for me, it's guys, it's impact, high in the lineup guys in their prime with some team control or guys who are willing to sign a longer term extension, which is why I said I'm interested in Dylan Larkin, because he is, whether you think he's a legit 1C or maybe just a great 2C on, you know, a cup contender, at the very least, he's an impact high in the lineup forward center in his prime with 5 years left on his contract. Like, I think those are players worth at least seriously exploring trades for. Whether the price ultimately makes sense or whether he wants to come here, like, we just don't know right now. Obviously, as has been widely reported, he's not on the Bruins, and the Bruins are not on his initial list, but there has now been, I saw Pierre LeBrun was on this, that he believes, if it hasn't happened already, that Steve Yzerman is going to go back to Larkin and his agent and ask him to expand the list. He believes Larkin is probably open to that, at least adding maybe a few more teams. So we'll see how all this plays out, but I don't think, you know, I don't think it was done at like, just here's my list of three teams and up, I guess Dylan Larkin's going to one of those three. Like, I think there's still more of this story to kind of.
Did you know that there are over 200 legends like Andrew Jones, Albert Pujols, Felix Hernandez, and Ken Griffey Jr. in MLB The Show 26? Collect them all and current all-stars to build your perfect lineup. MLB The Show 26 is available now on PlayStation 5, Xbox Series XS, and Nintendo Switch. Rated E for everyone. Officially licensed by MLB Players, Inc.
Trying to be told.
Yeah, and both directions. I'm glad, Brian, that you brought up, you know, could this happen to the Bruins? Because I thought the direction you were going to go was more back to the conversation about Larkin, but both are valid. Like, you can have that fear that your top players are not going to be satisfied if you don't fill the team out correctly around them. And so I'm sure this will be a conversation we come back to, but I did want to react to what you just said, Scott. Three teams just feels like not enough for you to – it's not enough, right? Like, that's not enough for a general manager to work with, because at that point, it limits your ability to get a lot back, because you know only what this – you know, these other two teams, you know, if they all offer not that much, like, they don't really have to go up in price. But it always felt like three teams was too short of a list for a guy who – straight up wants out, right? Like, if you want out, I'm sure there's probably a lot of places you could look to and think, I'd be happier there, more so than just three teams. There could be three ideal spots, right? But there's still, there could be maybe 10 spots that you know you'd be happy, or something like that, or maybe even more than 10 spots you think you'd be happy. But is Boston on that second round of, you know, that second tier of his needs or wants? And we talked about how Charlie McAvoy and him have friendship. I think somebody said that he's also friends with Pastrnak, but and then Swayman's on Team USA too, so there's probably been some overlap with those two. I don't know how much they've had a chance to form a friendship as well, but like, if you have a goalie that you trust, that's a big part of choosing a team that you want to go to, is having a goaltender that you're like, well, at least I know no matter what, like, I could play my ass off, but he's going to have my back, rather than some teams where it's like, I could play the best season of my life and we're still going to lose because the goalie behind us isn't doing anything. But so I think that the Bruins might have some things he's looking for. And Boston is an original six city. So fan base is active, but not like Toronto, where they're kind of overly critical. I mean, they're somewhat critical, but not at that highest level of, Scott, I think you mentioned last podcast, like, Canadian teams might be off the list because those are more critical fan bases. And he has guys that he knows. I think he would like the goalie situation. And he would be in a big role, obviously. But he also comes into a conversation, if he were to come in this offseason before they choose their next captain, I don't really know what that would change in terms of like our dialogue, or, you know, the conversation surrounding the captaincy. But anyway, I think there's enough things that he would like. If the list has to expand, I feel like Boston has a good chance of being on it.
I think that there's a chance. I think that I would say, like, ultimately, to our conversation recently about, like, you know, is Boston still a destination for players? If the parameter is simply chance to win, best chance to win, I think you're talking, you know, 10 to 15 teams that are above the Bruins. If you're talking about everything, organization, city, fan base, lifestyle, roster pieces, all that stuff, right? Money, obviously, taxes. I think that the Bruins probably creep up a little bit further. Like, I think that, no, the Bruins don't have one of the better rosters in the league right now, but they still have a couple of really high-end players, one of the best forwards in the world, a Vezina caliber or Vezina finalist goaltender, to your point, Bridget. You know, Charlie's a top 15 D-man. You know, if you want to go off nothing else, just Norris voting, right? He's 13th. And all those guys are in their prime. And they do have some young pieces, right? You have a Hagans on the way. You have Minton. You have, you know, Letourneau. Not that I think players around the league, established players, looking at Dean Letourneau's stock, but you know what I mean. So there are, like, things to like about the Bruins hockey ops. Then the fan base, I think, if you were to ask players around the league, they would say, I would love to play for the Bruins fan base. Like, they're passionate, but they're not like, you know, that you want to play for passion, right? I think the city of Boston does not have weather going for it for much of the hockey season, but I would put Boston in the summertime up against any in the country. But Boston as a city has a lot of culture and you know, great schools for kids, players with kids, great, the best medical facilities in the world. Yeah. So there are a lot of things going for Boston, even if their roster isn't top notch, but it's okay. So, yeah, I think that it's fair to say that the Bruins could be like a reluctant, like, second option for Larkin, second tier option. You know, I just think, like, if you're David and Charlie right now, I don't think that they have a leg to stand on to request a trade right now, because in Larkin's case, he's missed the playoffs 10 out of 11 seasons. Charlie's been to the playoffs 9 times in 10 years, David 9 times in 12. And we can sit here and talk about each playoff roster the Bruins gave them. And I would say of their 9 playoff appearances, maybe 3 or 4 of those teams had like an actual chance to go to a final and maybe win if things went right. And then the other 5 were a combination of no chance, like the 17 season, no chance, the centennial season, no chance, this past season, no chance. The 18 season, they were improving, but no real chance. So I would say half their playoff appearances were like not even cup contenders, but, you know, whatever. But if the Bruins don't give them don't make improvements, I do think that in a couple of years, a year or two, if they can't see the plan, then they're going to start counting the years big time. And that's when the trade requests happen. And I think that there are ways for the Bruins to address some needs without mortgaging Higgins and Minton, right? Like, or Letourneau, for example. And I know I wasn't hell bent on this a few months ago, but like, if I'm playing devil's advocate to myself, Darren Radish only costs you money, right? And like, you know, he would fill a right shot defenseman need. And I don't think with the cap continuing to rise, $8 million and change, which is his AFP projection, is that crazy. The risks there are his age and if he was more of a flash in the pan. But theoretically, you could add that player and it solves you know, your right side for the next 3 to 5 years, no problem. And then up front, you're like, yeah, you'd have to add some players. But does it have to be Higgins going out, or do you trust that, you know, those guys can become something? So it's going to be a very interesting offseason, but I do think that if the Bruins top players, I don't think they have a leg to stand on right now, but if they can't see where the team is going and that there's not significant improvements in a year or two, I think all bets are off.
Doesn't it feel pretty telling regarding that right shot defenseman that, you know, Neely specifically highlights that? Bridget referenced it, but when he's talking about what they want to do, you know, he says we're a little light in the top 6 and that's still an area we want to address. On the back end, the elusive right shot D that has some offense on the offensive blue line would be helpful. And it's like, well, who are 2 of the top free agents this year? They are right shot D who fit that mold in Radish and Rasmus Anderson. I personally would rather go after Radish. Like, even though there's less of a track record there, it's hard for me to look at the way both of them played this year and go with Anderson. Like, I understand Rasmus Anderson has been a really good player in the past. I think he struggled when he got to Vegas. I think he's been pretty up and down these playoffs. He's had some good moments and some pretty rough games. But I'm like, I just feel like just about every time I watched the Lightning this year, I was like, damn, Darren Radish is like making things happen. Like, I know it's not a long track record, but it's like it didn't look fake watching it this year. Like, he was just legitimately really, really good.
I understand what you mean by that. Like, I think that's fair to say. Like, it didn't look fluky, right? And you don't get 70 points by accident as a blue liner. You just don't. Here are the 2 things about, because I've listed my trepidation about Radish. Like, I don't love, you know, signing a guy to 6-7 years when he's already 30. I don't love the lack of a track record. And I don't love the fact that there's probably going to be a lot of no movement and trade protection. Although, if we're learning anything right now, if a player wants to exercise it, they can. But I will say the few things I would like about Darren Radish being acquired is, A, you wouldn't have to give up any premium prospects or draft collateral to get him, which you would have to do theoretically to get a Simone Nemitz, right? The other thing I like about a Radish is, in particular, is he is everything that the Boston Bruins blue liners have not been in recent years, and that is a defenseman who gets shots through. Yes, he has an absolute rocket, but he gets shots through, and that is something that we've talked about in recent, you know, weeks, that if you can't, you know, generate chaos by shots getting through from the back end, then you're going to have a lot of one and dones, because even if Darren Radish or a player like him who can get the puck through doesn't score on an initial shot, just getting pucks through, going off of a, you know, the goalie giving up a bad rebound, or, you know, he has no choice but to give a rebound to the corner, in which case the Bruins forwards are now, they have a step on the opposing D. Like, that ability to get shots through from the point, Darren Radish definitely would bring. And that's an area of struggle for Boston. So those two things I would really enjoy about Radish. But a theme we'll talk about all offseason with whatever the Bruins do is, whatever they do, whether they're conservative, whether they're aggressive, whether it's this player, that player, this trade, that trade, there's risk everywhere. There's always going to be two sides to a move, right?
Yeah, and the risk here is that overpaying, and that was his best year of his career is behind him, right? Like, that's the risk that you take when you sign him. But I'm with you both. I think Radish makes the most sense in terms of who's available at right shot D. People will keep tweeting at me, Rasmus Sanderson isn't going to go anywhere. He's going to stay in Vegas. It's just, you know, they've already talked about it, but all but done or whatever. Like, he might want to stay there, especially if they win a cup. But I just think it's also more likely that you get Darren Radish. But if Anderson does stay, like, does that bring the price up even more, what it's going to take to get him?
Yeah, I mean, Vegas has decisions to make, though, because, like, they're right up against the cap, and they also have to give Pavel Dorofeev a new contract or trade Dorofeev's rights or risk getting offer-sheeted on Dorofeev. Like, so they, you know, Vegas, almost no matter what, is going to have to move some money out somewhere, but they may very well have to make a choice between Dorofeev and Anderson. And I don't know about you guys, but if I'm them, I'm going with Dorofeev. Like, I think... Oh, yeah. I think he's a better, more consistent, more impactful player,
and younger too.
Yeah.
Here's something else that I've been thinking about the last couple of days too, because I'm trying to piece together some, like, you know, if I were in the Bruins' shoes, like what would I do? Because we sit here all the time, we say, oh, they should have done that, should have done that, right? So, if, like, my problem with bringing in a Darren Radish is, like, I don't want the Bruins to go for. That's the easiest thing to do, right? It's the easiest thing to do is to sign the top free agent right shot defenseman on the market. Like, that doesn't take much development or creativity or hockey trade savvy or anything like that. It's lazy, right? It could be perceived as lazy, but it's also not getting younger, right? However, like I said, $8 million and change wouldn't be that, I don't think, crazy for what Radish certainly brought last year, even if it's like, so, you know, like the year before last, they had like 36 points. So, right. So call it in the middle. If he was like a 50 point guy, it's like, but, you know, for the next 4 or 5 years, like, that's like cool. Right. But like, if, you know, could they do a little bit of everything is my question, right? Like, could you bring in a Darren Radish, to solve your right side issues? And that bumps down Joakim Haru to the third pair, or, you know, somebody, one of your other depth guys plays their offside, like an Aspero or a Brunet or whatever. But at the same, in the same offseason, could you make a trade for like a Zellweger with, like, you know, Laurie and a pick, or Patra and a pick, or Laurie and Patra, or Middlestat and like whatever. Like, so could there be an offseason where, like, because the left side needs, you know, youth and speed too. Like we haven't talked about the forwards, right? But like, could there be an offseason where, like, you bring in Radish on the right and trade for Zellweger on the left? And it's like next year, it's like you have Zellweger and McAvoy, and then you have Lindholm and Radish and Zadorov and Joakim Haru. Like, but, could that, yeah. Could that happen? Or am I?
Diamond Dynasty has all new Red Diamond cards and World Baseball Classic content in MLB The Show 26. Collect your favorites and compete against the best. MLB The Show 26. It's available now on PlayStation 5, Xbox Series XS, and Nintendo Switch. Rated E for everyone. Officially licensed by MLB Players, Inc.
Dreaming.
No, it's definitely possible. I think everything's on the table because, yeah, they need, whether it's now or moving forward, they need help on both sides on defense. By the way, you know who coaches Zellweger in the AHL? Matt McIlvain, reported new Bruins assistant coach. So you have a you're going to have a very good detailed scouting report as far as, you know, hey, is what, how much untapped potential does Zellweger have? Would he be a fit with what we're trying to do here? Like, now you're going to have that firsthand knowledge if you decide to go after him.
Do you think Anaheim's really out on him? Like, that's the thing, too. Like, he's being talked about.
I don't think they really wanted
to trade him. Yeah, like, it's crazy.
I don't think they're out on him, but I think they clearly have a logjam there. And, you know, certainly in the playoffs, he was the odd man out. It seems like they want to try to continue to have, like, a veteran presence back there and not have so much youth on their blue line because they are trying to take that next step. And so it feels like they'll listen on him at least because, you know, if they get an offer that makes it worthwhile, maybe they recognize, like, hey, we have, you know, a bunch of other guys, Lacombe and Minchikov and, you know, on and on. Like, you know, maybe we're willing to move on from Zellweger if it brings us back something else in return that's valuable.
Well, and they got Gudas and Trouba too, though, that, like, might be, like, they're up. So, like, they might not be back. So it's like, are they that set on D right now? Like,
right. Which I think that they'd like to keep at least one of them because I think those guys are, like, valued veteran leaders on that team, on a team that's mostly really young. But yeah, we'll see. I just yet another team that has a very interesting offseason ahead of them.
Sorry, Bridget, go ahead.
No, you go ahead first.
I was just going to say, like, another RFA, I think he's an RFA, right shot defense, and that's like, hell yeah, if you can find a way to trade for him, sure. Is Brant Clark out in LA? But it's like, I look at that, and it's like, I don't, like, to me, he's like a priority for them to re-sign. Like, so yeah. I don't see that being realistic, right? It's like, they're getting older, they need him. So it's easy to look at an RFA list of players or UFAs, obviously, because they're all fair game. But it's easy to look at, like, an RFA list of players or, you know, players on rosters that could be – they're under contract, but they could be traded. And it's like, well, you know, does the team want to trade them? Like, do they need them? And, like, Brant Clark to me falls in that situation of, like, okay, yeah, he's an RFA. You could offer a sheet potentially, but it's like – or trade for. But it's like, why would LA do that? Like, he's one of their lone bright young spots of their team. Drew Doughty's, like, turning 50 next year. So, you know.
One last point I wanted to make, though, just on this, like – kind of the bigger picture of, like, to Elliot Friedman's point about this becoming a trend. I would just note that in most of those other cases, it was guys who had contracts coming up who told their teams, like, I'm not going to re-sign here. Matthew Tkachuk, Quinn Hughes, most notably, like, those were guys who were, like, a year and a half out from their contracts being up. And, like, honestly, like, I give them credit for being clear with their team. I'm not going to re-sign here. So then it becomes in everyone's best interest to trade him. If Austin Matthews does request a trade, same thing, right? He has, what, a year left or 2 years left? Like, he has a contract coming up. So that would be a case of either I'm willing to re-sign in Toronto or I'm not. And if he's not, then, like, obviously Toronto has to trade him. Can't lose Austin Matthews for nothing. So what makes Dylan Larkin unique, even among all these other players pushing for trades, is he has 5 years left. Like, he and the team already made the long-term commitment to each other, and now he's, you know, blowing that up 2 years into the deal. So that is a little bit different, and that is something to keep an eye on. Another commonality in a lot of these, not in Larkin's case, but the American top players on Canadian teams. Like, I wonder if that changes things for Canadian teams in terms of, like, listen, we all know, like, if you're drafting, best player available, but if two players are close, do they now maybe default to the Canadian or even a European player and not be a little bit timid in terms of making an American, like, the face of their franchise, like Calgary did with Tkachuk, like Vancouver did with Quinn Hughes. We'll see what happens in Ottawa, where it's Brady Tkachuk and Jake Sanderson on the back end. Austin Matthews in Toronto. Like, Montreal, everyone's happy right now, but, like, obviously Lane Hutson and Cole Caulfield, both Americans. So, I, you know, in Winnipeg, Connor Hellebuck, another name that's popped up as like someone who might request a trade. Like, not all of those situations are exactly the same, and it's not as simple as just, oh, Americans don't want to play in Canada, because obviously plenty do, but that isn't a commonality that, like, I wonder if Canadian teams think about a little bit more going forward.
Well, I mean, also think about the teams you just listed, and the commonality is that they're mismanaged, like, during those periods. Like, they didn't have the kind of success those guys wanted, obviously, and there's enough dysfunction in a lot of the places you just listed that it's good enough reason to want to leave, you know, like, it, not saying everybody should be trying to force their way out, but I mean, would anybody blame Austin Matthews if after what he's been through there, he doesn't want to be there anymore? Look, Mitch Marner's Canadian. He didn't want to be there anymore. And even Brad Marchand had made comments before about he wouldn't want to play in Canada. Like, it's not just an American thing. I don't think it reflects more on where, like, the state of the organization at the time, the direction, the belief that they're heading in the right direction. And just not wanting to have those missed opportunities, because unfortunately we all age and careers are short and pressure gets higher and higher, and they want to leave. So I do think that, yes, I've heard people talk about this, like, big name Americans wanting to leave Canada, but, like, there's also Canadians that have wanted to leave those teams, and some of those teams were definitely worth wanting to leave. So I just wanted to say that too.
Yeah, and also it's been pretty convenient where we're kind of – the NHL is in an era right now where the best teams are all in, like, you know, tax-advantageous states, and, you know, they happen to be great weather states. Like, for a long time – and I'm not calling conspiracy here. I'm just saying for a long time. I mean, the Florida Panthers were irrelevant, and the Tampa Bay Lightning, you know, they've always – yeah, Tampa's always been pretty competitive, I would say, the last, you know, 20 years. I mean, certainly they won a cup in 04. They had a couple of down years where they obviously got the Stamkos and the Hedman and the Vasilevsky picks. But I mean, Vegas wasn't even a team, right? And what if Vegas came in as an expansion team and they sucked? Like, would people be wanting to, so the fact that these teams are currently very good, and you know, they're also in great weather states, I think it's very tempting for players that are kind of, you know, freezing their cahoons off in Winnipeg to want to be like, hey, I wouldn't mind going to Dallas. Why not? If given the chance. So, it's interesting. It's interesting. But yeah, Bridget, you make a good point in the mailbag. Scott, any final thoughts?
I had one more. We'll obviously get into the draft more as we get closer throughout this month. But on the right shot offensive defenseman in particular, like, maybe you get that at 23. Tommy Blyle is a player, like, I'm definitely going to want to talk about more as we get closer to the draft. Someone who a month ago, I think everyone had him as a second rounder, and now he's shot up pretty much everyone's draft boards and might even be gone before 23. But an American player from New York who went to Cushing Academy, went up to the Q this year to play for Moncton, and just lit up the league, had, I think it was like 81 points in 63 games. It was the most by a defenseman in the queue in 45 years. He's a great skater. I saw Elite Prospects. They do these like scouts polls rating different skills. Blyle finished number one for straight line speed. There's a kid who has it. He's a little undersized, but he did measure in at 6 feet flat. So he's not one of, you know, he's not a 5'9", 5'10 defender. If you're going to, the draft's before free agency. So, like, potentially maybe you draft him and then you don't have to, you don't go all in on Darren Radish. Like, maybe you look elsewhere when it comes to using your money and your resources this summer.
Is he committed somewhere for next year? Right now,
so he's committed to Michigan State for 2027. Okay. As of now, his plan is to go back to Moncton for another season. But I do wonder if whoever drafts him might want to give him a nudge to maybe jump to college this year. Personally, that's what I would do. Like, I just feel like you look at the numbers he put up in the queue this year. I don't know what else he has to prove there, But yeah, we'll see.
So, you know, doesn't help them right now, right? To the whole Pasternak thing, McAvoy thing, like, you know, because, and for the record, I would love that. Like, I'm all about that, right? But because I've been the one to preach the patience, but to play devil's advocate, this is kind of why we're talking. Like, if you're David Pasternak, it's like, hey, listen, I'm glad that, you know, Letourneau's really becoming something at BC. I'm glad that, you know, Will Zeller's had a hell of a year at North Dakota. I'm glad Cooper Simpson tore up the USHL. I'm glad, you know, Tommy Belisle is going to tear up Moncton and then, you know, draft him and go to, you know, Michigan State. But like, how does that help me right now? Right. And so that's why it's like, if you're the Bruins management, do you like, can you exercise patience for a little bit here? Can you convince your top players, hey, just, you know, like we've had a lot of winning teams, not the ultimate prize, but a lot of winning teams. And if you want to be a Bruin for the rest of your career, like there's gonna come some years you have to kind of, you know, be patient a little bit. And, you know, when you've been to the playoffs 9 times in 12 years or 10 years compared to a Larkin situation, I can see, like, not that Sweeney's been perfect along the way, because I think there's been some years the Bruins have been contending and I don't think they were aggressive enough. I think there's also been some, you know, some conservative drafting and developing over the years, but like, you know, so everybody has some egg on their face here. But anyway, Bridget, you mentioned like 5 minutes ago about the mailbag, and I apologize. I didn't even plug that earlier. So we're going to get to a couple of mailbag questions here. So thank you all for continuing to submit them. And I guess we'll start off, Bridget, unless you had one you want to start with, but with the top.
I think maybe Bob, because there was a little bit of news on Bob's question over the last few days. And Scott, I think you can help with that if you want. I don't know if you're looking at it, but all right, I'll read it if that's okay with you guys. Bob says, greetings from Tampa. I recently moved to from Boston to Tampa. I get my Hockey East updates and Bruins updates from you guys. Great. Thank you, Bob. Can you please explain the different scenarios for the Florida and Toronto first round picks the Bruins own if they don't trade them? I get an ice cream headache trying to figure it out. Me too. What is the status? The second part, what is the status of the Quinnipiac defenseman that the Bruins have the draft rights to? So we'll start with the picks, because there was a little bit of reporting on the picks, specifically the Toronto pick this week. Scott, I don't know if you have that up.
Yeah, so the Florida pick is locked into 2028. That is an unprotected 2028 first-round pick. That got locked in because Florida finished bottom 10, got to keep their own pick this year. Their 2027 pick goes to Chicago as part of the Seth Jones trade. Bruins get 2028. The Toronto pick, obviously, they kept their own pick and move to number one overall in this year's lottery. There was some confusion because they also owe Philly a first round pick of, okay, what exactly are the conditions on this? Who gets 27? Who gets 28? Cam Neely told reporters at the charity golf tournament this week that they were under the assumption that they are getting a 2028 unprotected first round pick from Toronto. Then yesterday, Wednesday, Kevin Kurtz, who covers the Flyers, reported that the NHL has told the Flyers that as of now, Philly gets 2027, Boston gets 2028, but if the pick is in the top 10 in 2027, Toronto gets to choose whether that goes to Philly or Boston. So this is what was reported all along as a condition of the pick. But then, like, people in Philly seem to think that Toronto keeping their pick changed that condition and they got 27 no matter what. So it seems like the NHL has clarified that if that pick is in the top 10 next year, Toronto gets to choose which team it goes to. Now, my belief is it would still go to Philly, because I don't think they're going to hand the Bruins a top 10 pick if they can avoid it. But who knows? Maybe by that point, like, they've traded Austin Matthews and they're in a full rebuild and they worry 2028 might be an even better pick. Like, I guess it's possible you could get 27. But most likely the Toronto pick will also be an unprotected 2028 first.
Real skin results start with one daily ritual. Meet Daily Microfoliant from Dermalogica. This iconic exfoliating powder activates with water to gently polish away dullness and uneven texture. It leaves skin instantly smoother and more luminous while supporting your skin barrier. Formulated with professional expertise to deliver visible results daily, even on sensitive skin. Discover your healthiest skin today. Visit Dermalogica.com and use code SMOOTH at checkout for an exclusive gift with your $65 purchase.
Round pick.
Yeah, see, that's the craziness that keeps going around. Because it keeps changing, reporting keeps changing. And then, yes, when Toronto got to keep this year's pick, everybody freaked out even more. but I cannot imagine a scenario where Toronto chooses to give the Bruins a top 10 pick. So I do think it's probably still going to Philly for 2027. And that's in their best interest because they're, you know, Philly's not in the division. They're in the conference, but they're not in the division. So I just can't see that happening. Brian, what do you think about that?
Yeah, you guys kind of hit it there. I think, like, you know, if in a world where they trade Matthews and they're just completely rebuilding, like, you know, I think all bets are kind of off, but as long as they're still competitive, which is what Toronto's trying to do, then I don't think they're itching to give the Bruins, who are a division opponent, a top 10 pick. At least Philly, it's like maybe you're battling a wild card spot with them at some point, but yeah, I agree with what you guys said. I'll just hit this one quickly because it'll take 2 seconds. But
sorry, I wanted to make sure we didn't ignore the second part of Bob's question about the Quinnipiac defenseman, which is Elliot Groenewald. He's going back to Quinnipiac for another year, as is Chris Pelosi. Quinnipiac, as usual, should have a very good team. My guess is they'll be a preseason top 10 team. Groenewald had a really good season. I think he was the ECAC, like, defensive defenseman of the year. He won something along those lines. He led the country in plus minus. So he's developing nicely. I've talked to people who think, like, he's definitely going to be an NHL player. I'm always a little bit, I've admitted before, like, sometimes the really good defensive defenseman in college can be a little bit of a blind spot for me. I'm usually a little bit more skeptical than most. Cause I've also seen really good defensive defenseman in college who never sniffed the NHL. But I do think there's some reason to be pretty optimistic about Elliot Groenewald, but he will be doing another year in college.
Yeah. It's like, is he the next Jacob Slavin or the next Tommy Cross, right? Which one is it? So, all right. Let's go to Dream Reaver 71 on YouTube. I have a question for you guys. Does Robert Thomas have a no trade clause? If so, who says he'd waive to come to Boston? So he does have a full no trade clause, I think, for the next 4 seasons. No, there is no guarantee he would waive it to come to Boston. I guess, simply put, do you guys have any comments on that? But beyond that?
No, like, obviously you don't know until you ask, or until St. Louis goes far enough down that road to get which teams he would approve a trade to. But we've mentioned it before, but it is worth knowing with Robert Thomas, as far as we know, he has not requested a trade. We referenced the Andy Strickland report that he's not going to get traded this summer. It's not, according to him, not something the Blues are even considering. So I think we always leaned towards that being, you know, on the longer shot side. As fun as this to talk about, and I've said, like, if he actually is available, I'm going pretty much all in to try to get him. Like, I think that is just such a perfect – would be such a perfect addition for the Bruins, but does not seem like anything's happening this summer.
I mean, for the same reasons he'd be a perfect fit for the Bruins, he'd be a perfect fit in St. Louis. Like, you know, maybe they want to trade Jordan Kyrou, maybe they don't, but you have Thomas, you have Kyrou, you have Snuggerud, you know, you have, three
Holloway, Philip Roberg on defense. Like,
yeah, 3 first-round picks this year alone. Like, you know, I don't know why they would want to. Robert Thomas is 26 years old, turning 27. It's like, you don't move on from 80 to 90 point sentiment at that stage of their career when whatever. So yeah, it doesn't appear to be happening, but to the question, yeah, he has a full no trade clause. I think for all but the last year of his deal, which is a modified no trade. And I don't know what amount of teams that is, but in any event, Alex on YouTube, how do you see the left side of the Bruins D-core shaping out in 2 to 3 years once this supposed retool may be complete? I feel like the left side of their defense may be a major need in the near future in addition to the right side. So, you know, we pretty much said that earlier too. Scott, you were the one that said that. Hampus and Zadorov are not getting any younger as well, and especially with Lindholm's recent injuries. That's part one. Let's stick with that for right now, and I'll go to part two afterwards.
Yeah, I think at some point in the next few years, like, we're going to be talking about the Bruins looking for a legit number one on the left side. We should be talking about it already. Like, if they'd gone Toronto's pick, I've said before, my guy was Carson Carroll's, who would project to be that kind of player, a left shot, future top pairing guy. By the way, along the lines of like where players want to go, Carson Carroll's had some comments at the combine about like, he's a farm boy. He's from like a very small town, Alberta, I think. And he was saying like, I don't know if I'd be a fit in a city. he's like, I don't know if I like cities. And it was like, bro, like every NHL team's in a city, man. Like, you might want to get used to it.
He's going to Carolina, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, he can live in Rehoboth.
Yeah.
there you go.
There's a few country towns in the vicinity, right, of most cities. You can live out there, commute.
But now I'm like, now I think the absolute funniest thing that could happen in the top 10, though, is that the Rangers take Carroll's at 5.
Right.
Not just put him in a city, but put him in Manhattan.
There could be a whole show about it, like a whole like, you know, they follow him around like as he learns to, you know, grow up, and I could see a sitcom coming from that. But yeah, that's kind of a crazy comment. The crazy comments I had been hearing were, you know how some teams ask the weird questions, like, if yeah. I gave you a brick, what would you do with it? Like, that kind of stuff. Like, those are always interesting to find out.
If you're stranded on an island and there's one other person and that other person has a water bottle, would you kill them for the water bottle? Like,
I'm just picturing like 10 NHL executives just sitting in a room, wicked stoic with their pens and their notepads. So if you had a brick, what would you do with it?
Is this the Hunger Games? Like, what the hell is this?
It's so ridiculous.
I'd hit you over the head with this. So I don't have to hear any more of your stupid questions.
I know. Just cut the shit with the questions. But those always, honestly, they make me a little bit mad because, like, can you imagine if somebody asked you that in a job interview, like Scott or Brian, like someone was like, I'm going to need to know the answer to this. Would you hit someone with a brick or?
The exact, like, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What the hell is the right answer to this? Like, yeah. No, there's not. No, like, no, I'm not going to hit someone with a brick. But yeah.
If you could go to Chick-fil-A on a Sunday.
Yes. I'll cut you off right there. Yes.
Yeah. If Chick-fil-A opened on Sundays, would you go?
Yeah, exactly. So,
Outside of drafting that guy, which, you know, at 23 doesn't seem like, I mean, you never know, but maybe they go for the right side, maybe they go for a forward. Outside of drafting, right? Like who could be that solution? We have obviously mentioned like an Olin Zellweger if he were somebody you could trade for. I think he kind of fits that bill. He's worth taking a chance on, but I just don't know, you know, I don't think there's any UFAs out there worth a damn on the left side. I don't think there's, you know, like even RFAs. It's like, okay, yeah, Zellweger. It's like beyond that, it's like, are there, you know, you hear about Simone Nemitz, you know, potentially being out in New Jersey. He's a right shot. So it's like, there's no real, if you take Zellweger off the board, like, there's not many obvious trade candidates or RFAs or UFAs out there, to my knowledge right now, that, you know, solves the Bruins problem outside of the draft. Unless you guys can think of anybody, you know?
No, not off the top of my head. But like, I think if you upgrade the right side this year, I think you're okay going into next season, right? But like, longer term, yes. At some point, you're going to clearly need an upgrade over Hampus, Lindholm, and Zadorov. But, you know, not that I think like either one of those is like a bona fide top pairing guy right now, but if you went into next season, let's just say it is, they signed Darren Radish.
Yeah.
And your back end next year lines up as your top four, regardless of how you line it up, but your top four defensemen in terms of minutes are McAvoy, Radish for right shots, Lindholm, Zadora for left shots, Asperos in a third pairing role, either on the left or the right side. And then it's either Henry Okiharu or maybe Frederick Brunet gets a chance.
Yeah.
Like, that's a pretty solid decor. Like, is it elite? Are we like, oh my God, Stanley Cup, here we come? Like, probably not, but like, relative to the league, that's a good decor. So you don't need the left shot right now. But at some point, yeah, you will.
I noticed you didn't mention Mason Lauri's name, so I take it you're under the impression he's gone too.
True. Yeah, I mean, I do think he's – there's so much smoke there that it does feel like there's got to be some fire there. But, yeah, I mean, if he's back, obviously he's in the running for a job.
Yep. Okay, part two of this question I find interesting too. Get you guys' take on it. So Alex asks again, would you take a flyer on Patrick Laine? Is there any chance he could be a 25 to 30 goal type of guy and maybe a Morgan Geeky type of, I'll add a word here, reclamation signing? What do you guys think about him? I mean, obviously, like, Laine has been, it's been a long time, like nearly a decade since he was anything of anything. I just feel like at some point, like, you never say never, but, you know, it's been nearly a decade of like, what's going on with this kid? Where is he? Is he playing? Is he not? If he is playing, what's he doing? Nothing much. So I don't know. You guys talk to me about Laine.
I'm out on Patrick Laine. No, thank you.
No, thanks.
He's not a kid anymore either. He's like nearly 30, right? He's like 28, probably 29, 28. I mean, he was Austin Matthews' draft class. So he was drafted back in like 2016?
Yeah, he's 28.
Yeah.
I think Patrick, I've probably haven't said on here because he just hasn't been relevant enough to talk about. But Patrick Laine to me is like, he's what David Pastrnak's dumbest critics say David Pastrnak is. Like the people who are like, all Pastrnak does is score goals. He doesn't do anything else. And it's like, well, he's also become one of the best playmakers in the league and he does do other things. Patrick Laine is like actually the player who only scores goals and does nothing else. Like, he's not a setup guy. He plays zero defense.
Does he even do that?
He's not really a good transition guy.
Does he even score goals anymore, Scott?
Not anymore, but I've seen his prime. He certainly had one of the best shots in the league.
But he's only 28. Like, that's still your prime. Like, I don't know. To me, that's still.
But it's been so long. Like since he, you know, showcased that shot. I mean, like, and he's bounced around like a tennis ball for the last like 6-7 years. So I don't really, you guys tell me like what, I mean, I don't know. Clearly the kid had an amazing release, but like I said, Austin Matthews and he were drafted back, I think in 2016, right? So it's like,
yeah, 2016.
First rookie year, he had 40 goals and that was it.
Yeah. And there's a lot of very good players that were taken after him. Including Charlie McAvoy. That might be one that would have
been. I guess it always comes down to like, what's the cost? What's the cost? And you know, what's the dollar amount? If it's like a Lucas Reichel type thing where like it's nothing, I mean,
Reichel was what, a sixth round pick?
Or? No, he was a first round pick, I think. Reichel.
No, no, what they traded for him.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, I can't imagine that Patrick Laine has much value right now. I mean, when's the last time he was an integral part of any roster he's been on?
You think?
He was healthy enough to play down the stretch, and the Canadians just told him, "You're not playing."
Right. So it's like. Anyway,
I haven't liked him in a while. I don't know if I ever really was a huge, you know, high on him person from the beginning, but
did he play in the Olympics for Finland? Did I miss him out there? Was he hurt? I imagine he would have been on the roster. I just don't remember seeing him out there. But maybe I just wasn't paying attention.
He was still hurt at that point.
Okay. Because I know, they had no Barkov, obviously, but
You guys want to close out with a ghost story?
Let's do it.
Real skin results start with one daily ritual. Meet Daily Microfoliant from Dermalogica. This iconic exfoliating powder activates with water to gently polish away dullness and uneven texture. It leaves skin instantly smoother and more luminous while supporting your skin barrier. Formulated with professional expertise to deliver visible results daily, even on sensitive skin. Discover your healthiest skin today. Visit Dermalogica.com and use code SMOOTH at checkout for an exclusive gift with your $65 purchase.
Do you want to read it, Bridget?
If people missed it, we started our last episode with some ghost stories.
I was wondering if we were going to get any, and someone emailed us. I saw one comment on YouTube like, oh, we love the ghost stories talk, but is this person's name Rockford that sent us the ghost story?
That's how Rockford signs him. I assume it's a him. That's how he signs his emails. So, yeah, we'll go right. Rockford.
Rockford sent us this. I'm going to read it verbatim. It's March 1984, Woodlawn Cemetery, Everett, Massachusetts. Yeah, wait, can I change my lighting? Wait, I got this. Okay.
That was way too quick.
Took my ring light. Okay. Wow. Woodlawn Cemetery, Everett, Massachusetts. The day was damp and rainy. An ominous fog shrouded the scene. A handsome young Irish lad is making his way to Pope John High for his daily matriculation. Out of the mist appears a gaunt figure walking toward our hero, a woman, slender, with red hair and ocean blue eyes that blazed with scorn. The young lad approached with apprehension, and as the figure passes by, she whispers, 44. Mere seconds pass, and our hero
James Higgins.
Yeah, 44. And our hero whirls to respond, only to see that the red-haired woman was completely vanished. 2 weeks later, the lad slips while scaling the cemetery fence, an act performed almost daily without incident for 4 years. While instinctively reaching out for safety, our hero gashes his hand and finger on the wrought iron spike fence, later had to receive 44 stitches in the local hospital. A true story, an expert from the memoirs of Rockford. Rockford, I hope I did it justice with the...
Wow, that was very spooky. I need a s'more or two right now and a campfire. That was crazy. Okay, I got one for you guys off the top of my head. Ready? It was June 19th, Boston, Massachusetts. 23 St. Louis natives entered Boston, and 23 oh, no. Boston natives did not show up.
This one's too scary.
Not gonna be able to sleep tonight.
What's that?
Not gonna be able to sleep tonight.
No, definitely not. That one's a little too scary to relive, to be honest with you. But yeah, no, love a good ghost story. Thank you. Who was that? Rockford.
Yeah. Yeah. The old Boston Garden was supposedly haunted. The rumors that there was like a leprechaun that lived in the rafters.
Was Lucky just he just didn't have a house?
Well, then the story was that when they tore down the old garden, they found a dead monkey from like one of the zoos.
Stop it.
That no, came through. So they're wondering if it was just a monkey running around the rafters the whole time.
Yeah, well, there was circus. I think he got loose at a circus event back when the circus used to be a thing. And also, I don't really think that a monkey probably survives that long up there. RIP monkey, but ghost monkey, maybe. But yeah.
Are circuses not a thing anymore?
Not a traveling circus, really.
Yeah, not nearly to the... Maybe some are still around, but certainly not the way they were when we were younger. Because like I remember when the Bruins would have to go on like a long road trip in, you know, like usually it's like November, because the circus would be in town. That was actually the circus was the first ever thing I went to at the Boston Garden. I only went twice before it closed. Once first time was for the circus, and then one Bruins game.
That's interesting. So
did you see the monkey?
I don't know. Yeah, there were definitely monkeys. I definitely saw a monkey. I don't know if it was the
I'm picturing the monkey from Pirates of the Caribbean. He just like has the medallion and the moon shines on him and he's going crazy. But that's interesting, Scott. Little peek behind the curtain. You know, Scott's very slightly, just slightly, by a hair, a little older than Bridget and I. But I don't, and by slightly, I mean, you know, 15, no, I'm just kidding, not 15 years. I don't remember the old garden. My father told me that I've been there, but so it was knocked down in 96. So
95.
Okay. So yeah. So I was like two if I was there, but that like 3 or 4 year age gap between us allows you to have a memory, which is interesting. Cause one of my biggest, like not regrets, it's not my fault, but like wish I could have is like experience a game at the old garden. For what it's worth, Bridget and I are identical ages almost, so she's the same boat as me.
But yeah, it's weird. It's like I don't even like my memory of it. So I must have been 5 or 6 when I went, and it's like I remember it. Like I remember like generally being there, but I don't really have like specific memories. Like I couldn't tell you like exactly what the crowd sounded like, or definitely not like what happened in the game. But I think it was like the same year. I think it was like the same year I went to my first Red Sox game. And it's like, you just remember like that you went. And
yeah.
So I have these like vague memories of what the old Boston Garden was.
My dad claims that him and his best friend, Brian, not Brian DeFelice, his best friend
him
went to the last ever Bruins game at the old garden. Could be a fishtail, you know, but
my dad was there too.
Your dad was there too? Yeah, I think it's true because my dad's friend was rich. So my dad's friend was rich. So pretty sure they were there.
That picture behind me is the last hurrah. It's from the last hurrah. So your dad's in that picture somewhere.
I have a puck. I have a puck and a picture of it too in my studio at my parents' house.
Yeah. I remember we might still have it somewhere, but we had a brick from the old garden when they were tearing it down. Like you could just like, they were like just selling them. You could claim them. So I have no idea if we still have it somewhere, but I remember growing up, I had a Boston Garden brick like on my shelf in my room.
And Scott, what would you do with it if you were on a desert?
That's what I was going to say. That's funny.
Yeah, throw it at my sister when I got mad.
Yeah, nice. All right, it seems like a good full circle way to end.
It does. Yeah. Again, if you submitted a mailbag question and you did not hear it, fear not. It will it'll be read off in the next episode that we do it. So thank you for submitting them. Continue to submit them to us. Tweet at us individually at the show. Comment on YouTube. Bridget does a great job. Monitoring the comments and grabbing those. Scott, I think, monitors the emails. I do absolutely nothing. Email us skatepod@wei.com and all that good stuff. So any final thoughts from the two of you?
Go USA. World Cup, baby.
Go USA. Bridget, you good?
Think we can pull off the World Cup Olympic gold double?
It'll be a Disney movie if they do. That's for sure. Yeah. All right. Thank you all very much for listening. Have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you on – what do we do? On Mondays or Tuesdays?
Monday.
Summer. Yeah, Monday, we'll do Monday.
Monday and Thursdays is what we do. I'm trying to remember our schedule. We'll talk to you next Monday. Thanks for listening.
Real skin results start with one daily ritual. Meet Daily Microfoliant from Dermalogica. This iconic exfoliating powder activates with water to gently polish away dullness and uneven texture. It leaves skin instantly smoother and more luminous while supporting your skin barrier. Formulated with professional expertise to deliver visible results daily, even on sensitive skin. Discover your healthiest skin today. Visit Dermalogica.com and use code SMOOTH at checkout for an exclusive gift with your $65 purchase.